Hello, hello. Welcome back to another episode of the P2P Soapbox. I'm your host and P2P BFF, Marcy Maxwell. Being a leader in the peer-to-peer world can feel like a whirlwind of demands, right? Stay relevant, innovate, stick to the fundamentals, explore new revenue streams, prioritize effectively, cultivate meaningful relationships. It is a lot to juggle and can leave even the most seasoned leader feeling a bit dizzy. But in the midst of this whirlwind, it is crucial to not lose sight of our why. The reason we embarked on a career in the nonprofit sector in the first place, and also why we joined our respective organizations. Today, we have a remarkable guest who navigates these demands with grace, care, and a steadfast connection to her why. I am thrilled to introduce Kim Sloan, Executive Vice President for Development and Community Health at the American Heart Association. Powered by millions of volunteers, the American Heart Association funds innovative research, advocates for the public's health, and shares life-saving resources. In addition to celebrating its 100-year anniversary in 2024, the American Heart Association was also recognized this year as the Peer-to-Peer Professional Forum's Organization of the Year. It is also home to two of the top five peer-to-peer fundraising programs in the U.S. For the fourth year in a row, HeartWalk came in as the number one peer-to-peer fundraising program on the U.S. P2P Top 30 list, followed closely by Kids Heart Challenge at number four. And Kim is one of the masterminds behind this success, leading a diverse team of fundraising leaders responsible for delivering nearly half of the organization's public revenue. That is no small job. So during our conversation, Kim generously shares insights from her 20 plus years at the American Heart Association. We'll delve into how this century-old organization remains relevant to today's volunteers and supporters, the delicate balance between revenue diversification and strategic focus, and the vital role of cultivating relationships with internal colleagues and, of course, volunteers. She'll also offer some advice on how professional fundraisers can reconnect with their why. So without further ado, let's give a warm welcome to the American Heart Association's Kim Sloan. Kim, welcome to the P2P Soapbox. So happy to have you.
Thank you, Marcy. I'm thrilled to be here with you today.
I know I already shared a little bit about all the great work of the American Heart Association, but I'd like to hear it from you. Can you tell me a little bit first about yourself, your personal and your professional journey that led you to your role at the American Heart Association?
Absolutely. You know, I started my career at the American Cancer Society, almost 25 years ago, and got that job right out of college. And college is really where I found the calling to go into nonprofit. I was actually doing a lot of volunteer work and just thought, why wouldn't I want to do this for a career? And so had many opportunities to volunteer and got my undergraduate in nonprofit management. And, you know, we're just able to learn and grow and really have an opportunity to get inspired and motivated to do this as a career. And worked at the American Cancer Society for many years and then came to the American Heart Association. And I have been at the American Heart Association for 21 years. And, you know, I really love that what we do every single day. From a personal passion moment, I will say that, you know, our family has been greatly impacted by heart disease. And so it's personally motivating to me to try to impact others that have, you know, have had this experience and try to prevent it from others having to go through heart disease and losing a loved one to either heart disease or stroke. And so that's why I wake up every single day motivated to continue to do the work that we do at the American Heart Association.
And what does your role as the Executive Vice President for Development and Community Health include? What do you oversee?
Yes, great question. So I oversee all of our core campaigns. And so that is our peer-to-peer, which is our heart walk, as well as our Kids Heart Challenge, also our Go Red for Women luncheons and our gala events and our Cycle Nation events, as well as all of our direct response. That includes our DRTV efforts and our online fundraising and our direct mail fundraising. And I also oversee our Center of Development Operations, which is our reporting. And, you know, making sure that we can analyze our campaign and look at it strategically about where our opportunities are. And so that's another big part of what we do. And then our training department for our development staff was a new addition that we added this year. And so that's a high-level overview of some of the things that we do in our department.
So just a small portfolio.
Just a small.
Just a few things. So, you know, in the peer-to-peer world, you know, we all know the American Heart Association, right? I think a lot of us have long coveted a lot of your peer-to-peer programs. So can you just give us a little bit more on kind of how the association uses peer-to-peer as an outreach platform, as a fundraising platform? What has that meant to the organization?
Sure. You know, I will say, you know, when we look back, we're going to turn 100 years old in June. And so when we think back to how the organization started, of course, it started by volunteers. But the other thing that we started is, you know, really being able to seek out people to come alongside us and help us in our fight against heart disease. And so, of course, that was cardiologists that came alongside us for the science component of it. But we also, in the early 50s, started a program called Dear Neighbor. And that program actually was volunteers in communities that would go up to people's homes and knock on the door and ask people to donate to the American Heart Association. And it was a very successful, I would say that was our first peer-to-peer the early 50s of engaging volunteers to come alongside us and ask their friends, families, and neighbors to make a donation to the American Heart Association. That certainly would not work today. But it was our first step into that and really having volunteers across the country supporting the American Heart Association. And we've continued to evolve over time. And, you know, through that evolution, we have had the opportunity to create, you know, events in schools like our Kids Heart Challenge events and our Heart Walks. That really is our community-based event that helps companies and friends and family come alongside us and have a day of celebration and to walk together in this fight against heart disease and stroke. And then we also have, you know, opportunities in our galas and our luncheons to reach an audience that may not want to participate in a heart walk campaign. They might like to get dressed up. And, you know, a lot of our philanthropic donors enjoy that social experience. And so having many points of entry for people, I think, is really an important element to our organization that has allowed us to really meet people where they are, which is a guiding value and something that's very important to the American Heart Association.
It really is impressive what the American Heart Association has done. And I love hearing that it's your 100 years, and that is such a milestone. I had not heard about the Dear Neighbor program. It sounds very Texas to me, as somebody else who's from the South. I love it. But how do you take an organization that's been around for that long, right, and make it relevant to today's issues, today's fundraisers, today's volunteers? You know, how has your messaging strategy had to evolve over the past 100 years to engage this new generation of fundraisers?
Oftentimes, as a leader, I like to look externally for inspiration and for learnings. And one of the companies that really sticks out to me is the Stanley Cup. You know, in 1913, the Stanley Cup was founded, and it's been around for, you know, over 100 years. And it started out as a steel tumbler for the blue collar worker to keep their soup or their coffee in. And it really was a staple for workers to be able just to get their nutrition through the day. And it was very basic, one size fits all. But years later, many, many years later, they were inspired to look at it differently and to reinvent themselves in a new way. And so much so that they went after a completely different audience. They went after ladies. They went after the Gen Zs. And not only did they go after that clientele, but they also operated very differently by engaging influencers to help them to get the word out and to make it cool and fun and something that people would be attracted to. And They also created accessories for these Stanley Cups, right? So you can put a name tag on it. You can do all kinds of different things with our Stanley Cups these days. And it really just became a buzz and something you wanted to have. And if you look at how their sales were impacted, in 2019, they were a $73 million company. And in 2023, they were a $750 million company.
Amazing.
And when I think about a company that completely, you know, rejuvenated their brand and had such a different clientele come into their organization. And certainly the profitability is huge. But I think we can all learn from examples like that of how Stanley Cup, you know, was known for one thing and they completely changed and went after a different demographic and was successful in that demographic as well. And I think that when I think about the American Heart Association, I'm proud of the work that we've done over the last 100 years. We have kept our message and our mission the same, right? Our entire existence is to help people with heart disease and stroke. And that has remained the same. But how we have looked at that has changed, right? At first, it was just, okay, if you had heart disease, how are we going to treat you? How are we going to help you? Then we evolved to how do we prevent it from happening? And now we have really evolved into the social determinants of health, right? Because even if you do all the right things with prevention, if you eat right, if you exercise, even if you do all of those elements to have a healthy life, if you live in a neighborhood where you can't walk to get healthy food, if you live in a neighborhood where you can't take walks and exercise and get your kids in a healthy environment, that's going to impact your well-being as well. And so we really are helping people to know how to make better habits, but then also trying to change environments where they live, work, play, and pray, have an opportunity to create the environments where people can show up and be healthy as well. And so I think our mission has stayed, consistent. And I think how we've gone about raising money to support that continues to be something that we evolve even to this day, right? You know, as we look at how can we enter the gaming space and, you know, TikTok and the influence and live streamers, you know, this is where people are. And so how can the American Heart Association meet those people where they are and be in those spaces as well? So those are things we are looking at, continuing to try to look at how can we be there and then also still be in the communities and the schools and the ballrooms and the luncheons where people also want to be. And so it's helping us just to expand how we're going about our work.
And I imagine the messaging about the health equity component, I bet that resonates really well with kind of your Gen Z, your, you know, what's coming after that, Gen Alphas. I know they're not, maybe not 100% in the demographic just yet, but this idea of why can't everybody have the same access? I feel like this generation is going to save us all, right? They might drive us crazy in the short term, but this idea of why do I have access to this and somebody else doesn't is so pervasive. So I think that shift is going to really resonate. If it's not, I imagine already resonating, especially with your youth fundraisers.
Absolutely. Well, it's something that some people just weren't aware of, right? If you are isolated in one area, you don't always see the impact. And I think that's part of all of our roles in whatever job we hold is just helping people to see the opportunities and the needs in, you know, in every community.
Absolutely. And so speaking of different communities that are out there, and you mentioned live streaming, you mentioned schools, you mentioned walks, you know, we've long envied programs like Heart Walk and Kids Heart Challenge that have sat at the top of the U.S. top 30 list for, you know, years, right? Or close to it. But those are far from the only offerings, as you said, and, you know, diversification of revenue is always so important. But I think the challenge with that is how do you balance diversification and prioritization, right? We all want to do lots of different things and reach lots of different communities. And sometimes that can be a fatal flaw for an organization. So how do you choose where to focus your energies, your budgets? How are you kind of evaluating all of these opportunities?
It is so hard to know where to go and when to pull back. You know, the one thing that I will say is I have always learned from leaders is if you're not innovating and you're not trying new things, that you're not growing, right? And so, you know, it is a responsibility for us, especially as leaders, to continue to inspire and continuing to push us to think differently. And the one thing that I would say is, and we try to support this as much as possible at the American Heart Association, is try new things and then fail fast. And if it's not working, part of the leader is needing to recognize, you know what, we've got to pull back from that. We tried that for whatever reason, it didn't work. And then it's our job to say, why didn't it work? And learn from it, so that we do that better next time. And I think, you know, we all probably have examples of this. You know, the American Heart Association many years ago tried a marathon program, and it is very successful for other organizations. You have many on the peer-to-peer, top 30 list. But at the American Heart Association at that time, it wasn't the right time for us, right? The expenses were too high. There was a lot of elements to that that wasn't making that as successful as we wanted it and needed it to be at the time. So we chose to pull back to say, you know what, it may not be a no forever, but right now the return on investment was not what we needed it to be. And we care very much about, you know, our donors and being good stewards of our donor dollars. So we pulled back from that and said, you know what, that's not where we need to spend our time and resources at this moment in time. So I think organizations should be trying new things, and they should be comfortable saying, you know what, not everything's going to work. But if you don't try new things, you're not going to have the opportunity to come up with something that could take your organization to the next level.
So we talk a lot in this podcast about the importance of relationships in the world of peer-to-peer. You know, it's not just the technology. It's not just the corporate sponsors. It's not just the experience on the day of your race, your walk, your cycling event. It is about the relationships in the community. And you've had a long career at the American Heart Association. And I heard a quote from one of your colleagues who said, if you worked with Kim Sloan, you know that she cares about you. And so can you share a little bit about your philosophy on relationship building, both with those internal colleagues and also external partners and the volunteers that you talked about?
Yeah, you know, I would say relationships to me is the number one factor in any career. It would be something that I would say, knowing I've only been a nonprofit for my career, but I think it is such a key element to not only relationships, but to business. You know, people have to trust you in order to want to work with you, and in order to trust that you're going to put them in the right positions, either as a volunteer or a staff person. And I have just always been someone that really, it's just, my character more than anything, I really do care about people, and I want them to be successful. I want them to be happy. And I feel like it's my role as a leader to help with that as much as possible. And part of that is helping them to find their seat, the right seat on the bus, and putting them in environments where they have an opportunity to thrive and try new things and be innovative. And part of it is with volunteers, finding out why are they wanting to get involved with the American Heart Association. And there's lots of reasons why volunteers want to engage. Sometimes it's a passion for your mission because they've been impacted by heart disease or stroke. Sometimes it's because they're new to the community and they want to engage and get to know other executives. You know, another opportunity might be because they want to build their network and they want to, you know, they want to have an impact on the community, but they also want to build relationships. And it's really our job as an organization and as a staff member to find out what is the why from our volunteers. Why are they motivated to engage with us? And to make sure we're helping them fulfill what is important to them as well. And I think that when we go back to that always, we can help make sure our staff and our volunteers have a good experience with the organization. You know, I have this quote that I often have on my desk, and it's from Theodore Roosevelt. And it says, people don't care what you know until they know how much you care. And I think that's so true, because people will come alongside you and they will follow you and they will do what's needed if they know that you care about them and have their best interests at heart. And I think that as a leader, that is so critically important. Whether you're dealing with a volunteer or staff member, they need to trust you and they need to know where your heart is. And so that comes naturally to me, but I know sometimes others have to work at that. And I would say if you are someone that doesn't just intuitively lead you, I would say going back to the why of the volunteers and the staff members maybe could also help you find that motivation and to, you know, be able to lead in that way as well.
Yeah, I had a boss early in my career who always said, we are simply the conduit through which our volunteers and our supporters get to raise money for the cause that they love. Like, we are the channel that is helping them make it happen. They're not helping us. That was a big aha for me early in my career. Was I thought, well, these volunteers are here to help me raise money, not I'm here to help them raise money. And I remember when that kind of switch flipped, you know, yes, for me. And love it was kind of changed my whole career thought process.
Yes. Love that, Marcy. That's a great example.
What would be one piece of advice you'd give to someone, you know, just starting out in the peer-to-peer world? A lot's changed in, you know, 20 years for me, 25 years for you. You know, what would advice would you give to somebody that's new to the world of peer-to-peer? And then the flip side, what about someone who's been around as long as we have about how to take it to the next level?
So for the new person, I would say take a moment to learn from others, because you can't possibly know everything that you need to know about peer-to-peer or about your organization or about your campaign. So I would say, first and foremost, take a step back to learn. Secondly, I would say it is all about relationships, as we just discussed, and that is relationships internally and externally. So make sure you're in your community and you're getting to know the community leaders, that you know what is important to that community and what they care about, and to be present in the community so they see that you care about what's going on in the community and you're a part of the community as well. I think that's really important. You know, I had a manager very early on that would always tell us in the office, you're not going to find money sitting in your desk. It's not in your drawer. Like, get
out. Fundraising ain't happening in here. That's uh-huh. what that was my boss, what she would say.
So true. You got to be out with the community and with the volunteers and donors. And so I would say, you know, don't sit and wait for it to happen. Go out and make it happen in your communities. And I would say for people that have been around for a long time, I think it's going back to your why. Why did you say yes to come to work for your organization? What is your motivation? What is your inspiration? You know, I had an amazing volunteer who, you know, just passed away recently, and her name was Susan Nix, and she had this amazing necklace that she would wear to some of our events, and it had all of her pacemakers over the years, and she called it her memory maker necklace, and she would tell the story about her first pacemaker allowed her to see her daughter graduate from school. The next pacemaker allowed her the opportunity to walk her daughter down the aisle and to get married. The next pacemaker allowed her an opportunity to see her first grandbaby being born. And so she talks about how, you know, certainly the impact of science over time that has helped to save her life, but that the millions of volunteers and donors that come alongside our organization every day are not just giving to a science-based organization. They are making memories for other individuals. And so when I get up every day, I think about, how do I help extend lives for others? How do I create moments for families? I have a family myself, and I know how important that is, of having your grandparents around and having, you know, siblings and cousins. And so how can we create more memories for people? And I think that is really critical to somebody that's been around for 20 years of, why do you get up every day when the days and nights are long? And it's because, you know what, we want to impact people's lives. And, you know, as I think about this, you know, being an opportunity to recognize volunteers this week and their impact on organizations, I think about the millions of volunteers that come alongside us every day to help others have an impactful and a longer life.
That pacemaker visual, the pacemaker necklace is really powerful. As someone whose father has a pacemaker, that's really an amazing visual. And I think does tell the story really, really well about why so many people get involved with an organization like American Heart Association and the organizations of all those people who are listening. So if people are sitting here thinking, I want to get more involved, you know, I want to work for the American Heart Association, I want to attend their events, I want to learn more about Go Red for Women or Heart Walk or Kids Heart Challenge, where can we send people?
great place to start is, of course, our website and, you know, easytofindheart.org. And, you know, you can find any information about how to get involved or information about openings. And, you know, we would love it for you to visit our heart.org website and get to know us a little bit more.
Visit our heart is actually probably perfect way of saying it. And get to know us.
Just type in American Heart Association. You can find us. You can find us for sure.
I love it. Well, Kim, thank you so much. We're so excited to have you on today. We're so happy to recognize the American Heart Association as our peer-to-peer organization of the year earlier at our conference, and just continue to be amazed by all the great work that you and your team all over the country are continuing to do.
Marcy, thank you. It's certainly an honor to be recognized as Organization of the Year. And, you know, we appreciate the work so much that you do at the Peer-to-Peer Forum and just the education that you give to all of us. You know, I was taking notes, like pages of notes, as you were presenting that day on the data, and because it's so important for us to learn from each other. And Yes, we all are working for different organizations, but we are all bonded together in this nonprofit work, and we all want to make the world a better place. And that's really the power of this group coming together annually. So thank you for creating that opportunity for all of us to learn from each other.
Oh, you're too kind. Well, thank you so much, Kim, and we'll see y'all on our next episode.
The P2P Soapbox is produced in partnership with True Story FM, engineering by Pete Wright. Music this week is by I Am Daylight. If your podcast app allows ratings and reviews, we hope you'll consider doing just that for our show. But the very best thing you can do to support the P2P Soapbox is simply to share the show with a friend or colleague. Thank you for listening.